everybody, and happy new year. This is Dr. Colby Taylor, the host of the Abnormal Psychologist podcast. I'm a psychologist in Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm also an associate professor of behavioral sciences at Christian Brothers University. And it's 2023. I'm recording this episode on January 2nd, 2023. So again, happy new year. Sorry I wasn't able to publish a new episode before Christmas time. Hope everybody had a nice holiday season. My holiday break has sort of been a strange one. So my wife, Lauren, tested positive for COVID. I want to say it was like December 13th or 14th. I had just submitted my final grades, I think. And I was looking forward to a couple of days of rest and relaxation. And I got like 3 weeks of rest and relaxation at the house. So she tested positive for COVID. I tested negative like 4 days after she tested positive. And then another 4 days later, I tested negative. My daughter Emerson, like 10 days later, December 23rd, yeah, it was Christmas Eve, tested positive. Lauren had like a headache, no real serious symptoms, headache, sinus stuff. My daughter Emerson, who's 3, started getting sort of a runny nose, so we decided to test her, which she hates. There's my dog Shadow barking in the background. I don't know if you can hear him. But my daughter Emerson hates the COVID test. And she tested positive. And so then I decided to take another one, even though I was pretty, you know, didn't really have any symptoms. I tested positive. And so we started the quarantine clock over again. Luckily, Emerson and I never really developed symptoms. But here we are, January 2nd, and we've pretty much been hunkered down, whatever, since December 23rd. All right, so subject of today's episode. It is a new year, and I thought I would dedicate today's episode to New Year's resolutions. I know New Year's resolutions are sort of polarizing topics among psychologists. Some psychologists are like, you know, they don't lead to lasting behavioral changes. They sort of roll their eyes when you talk about New Year's resolutions. While others really think that New Year's resolutions can lead to meaningful change. So I'm recording this episode on January 2nd, again. Hopefully most of you haven't failed at your New Year's resolutions yet, since we're less than 48 hours into the New Year's. But I did see a statistic in prepping for this episode that 80% of people will fail their New Year's resolutions by February. I hate the phrase. I think I might have mentioned this in a past episode, but I hate the phrase New Year, New You. You're not going to reinvent yourself with a New Year's resolution. I think that's where a lot of the skepticism among mental health experts comes from, in this sort of reinvention, almost hypomanic reinvention that some people have with their New Year's resolutions. We don't want to get overambitious, and you're not going to reinvent yourself with a resolution. I was looking at the most common New Year's resolutions, at least in the United States, from Statista this morning. Number one on the list is exercise more. Number two is eat healthier. Number three is lose weight. So the top three are all sort of fitness related. Then we get to save more money, spend more time with friends, and spend less time on social media. So those are the top New Year's resolutions. This was published, I think, in December of 2022. So one thing I did right before this episode, sort of New Year, New You thing, because I've been in sort of COVID quarantine, I've grown out a mustache. I look pretty absurd, I think, with this mustache. But anyways, I started it with sort of the November thing. And then kept it growing since I didn't really have to get out in public. And so right before this episode, I shaved my mustache. I'm seeing patients tomorrow. I'm in clinic. I wanted to look somewhat professional. And so the mustache is now gone. So I've sort of reinvented myself. We'll see what my wife Lauren's out running errands now that she's out of quarantine. And when she comes home, she might be shocked to see sort of her baby-faced husband. Yesterday, I was talking to Lauren. I didn't realize that it's a New Year's sort of superstition, I guess, to not do laundry on New Year's. So I started the washing machine yesterday, and Lauren was like, "You shouldn't do that. You really shouldn't do that." And I was like, "What are you talking about? I'm doing laundry. My clothes stink." I've never had my wife tell me not to do laundry before. Anyway, she told me that it's bad luck to do laundry on New Year's, in that supposedly somebody will wash away or die in your family if you do laundry on New Year's. So I'm not really huge into superstitions, but this year I'll keep you updated on the podcast as to whether that superstition comes true. Hopefully it won't. Another superstition I was reading about related to New Year's involves like the underwear you wear on New Year's Eve into New Year's Day, like wearing red or yellow underwear. I think in certain Latin American countries symbolizes good luck or good fortune. Some people wear their underwear inside out on New Year's Eve, and that's supposed to bring about good luck or something. I don't know. I don't think I thought too deeply into what underwear I was wearing on New Year's. My New Year's Eve plans aren't that exciting anymore. Obviously, we're still sort of COVID quarantined. And then having two young kids, you know, I'm lucky to make it to like 9 o'clock or 9:30. Actually, on New Year's Eve, I fell asleep on the couch. And Lauren was like nudging me. She was like, "Are you seriously falling asleep?" I fell asleep on the couch. I don't think I made it to 10 p.m. on New Year's Eve. I feel like this episode has kind of been rambling so far. So let's put in some psychological science. And one of the things we talk about when making goals, achievable goals, is to make them the acronym SMART, S-M-A-R-T, SMART goals. This acronym SMART goal came from George Duran in 1981 and an article in actually the business field. It was an article in Management Review. And so SMART is an acronym. The S stands for specific. The M stands for measurable. The A originally stood for assignable, but now we pretty much consider it achievable. The R stands for relevant, but at first it stood for realistic. And the T stands for like time-related or time-bound. So we want our goals to be SMART. We want them to be specific. So a lot of times people making New Year's resolutions, like I was thinking about my own New Year's resolution. Do I want to be, obviously I want to be a better father or a better husband or a better professor. But that's not super specific. Like, yeah, I want to be, maybe you're listening to this podcast because you you want to get better with your mental health in 2023, which is a great goal. That's super vague. And when we create really vague, broad scale goals, it makes them really hard to achieve. So we want them to be specific. So instead of saying, you know, I'm going to focus on my mental health, my mental well-being in 2023, maybe I'll listen to 10 mental health related podcasts a month. That's a specific goal. Maybe instead of I'm going to be a great father or something like that, it's I'll take my kids for ice cream once a month. You know, something that's really specific, which leads into the second piece of the SMART goal acronym, which is measurable. We want something that we can count. So saying that I'm going to take my kids to get ice cream once a month, that's something that's countable. A lot of people, we'll talk about this in a little bit, have sort of fitness related. We already sort of talked about this. The top three New Year's resolutions in the United States deal with fitness. A lot of people say, I want to be fitter in 2023. That's not really specific. We want to come up with a specific goal. So maybe it's losing 5 pounds. Maybe it's running a 5K in less than 30 minutes. So we want these sort of specific goals. We don't just want these broad, nebulous, whatever goals. And obviously measurable, I just laid out some numbers in talking about fitness goals. I want to lose 5 pounds. I want to run a 5K in less than 30 minutes. Those are things that are measurable. You can either check that you achieved and, you know, sort of mark your progress. I'm a data nerd, so I could pull up SPSS or I could pull up Excel and sort of graph or track my progress, which is great. Some people are like super achievement oriented like that. You could visually put out a bar graph, not a bar graph, line graph or pie chart, not a pie chart, line graph, whatever, whatever floats your boat. You could put out some sort of graphic and track your way to achieve a goal. I've seen these sort of color in goals for like January. I saw this. It was divided into January's what, 31 days. I have to look at my knuckles for that. So it was a color graphic. Not colored in, but sort of like what a child would color. And it was divided into 31 segments. And every segment that you exercise, you get to sort of color in on the graphic. And then by the time you get to January 31st, if you worked out every day, you have this beautiful sort of colored in picture. So we've got specific, we've got measurable, then we have achievable. So you want it to be something that you can actually achieve. I might say that I want to run a marathon in less than 2 hours. That's really specific. That's measurable, right? Because I can measure my pace and see if I can get under 2 hours. That's not achievable for me. I'm not going to get to that point. I'm going to become really, really unmotivated and probably beat myself up when I'm not getting anywhere close to 2 hours, right? That's not realistic on my part. I ran a marathon in December, and I think my best marathon time in December, I was right around 5 hours. That was my fifth marathon, and my best marathon time ever is like 4 hours and 40 minutes. So there's no way I'm getting to 2 hours in 2023. You know, something realistic might be under 4.5 hours or something like that. I don't know. Definitely not under 2 hours, which would be close to world record time, I think. So with achievable, we don't want super pie in the sky goals. We want things that we can actually attain. And we also want them to be relevant. And so this is sort of where motivation gets tied in. I could do something that's specific, measurable, and achievable. Let's say that I want to get my scuba diving certification. That's specific. I want to get my scuba diving certification. Let's say I want to do it by May of 2023. And I can sort of measure my progress towards scuba diving certification. It's achievable. I think I can do that. I don't know how long it takes to become a scuba certified person, but I think you can do that. But for me, that's not really relevant. Like, I live in the middle of the United States. I don't live near an ocean. I don't really want to go scuba diving. I have no desire to go scuba diving right now. How is that really relevant to me? It's not. I would probably lose motivation. And, you know, I could attain it. I could, you know, get the hang the scuba certification on my wall. But like, what would I do with it? It's not really meaningful to me. And then the final part of the SMART goal is to have it time related or time bound. We want within a certain time period. So I've mentioned with the scuba certification, if I wanted to do that, I said by May of this year. We want it time related, time bound. We can sort of track our progress so that it doesn't become sort of this indefinite, that you're always trying to reach for it goal. We want an end time for it. So one time related or time bound goal that a lot of people have this year, I was looking on CNN, 35% of people are aiming for a dry January. So going the entire month of January without drinking alcohol. That's time related. That's time bound, right? You have those 31 days in January that you're not going to drink alcohol. It's specific. It's measurable. For most people, I think it would be achievable. And, you know, it seems to be a pretty relevant goal for a lot of people that might have partied too hard over the holiday season. So dry January, I think my wife and I are going to try it. My wife said she's going to try it. I said I was going to try it. And then yesterday, which was New Year's Day, we ended up celebrating Christmas with my family because we weren't able to celebrate on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve because of the COVID thing. And I had some coffee with some alcohol in it. My parents poured up for me when we were opening presents. So I lasted less than 12 hours for dry January. But I'm still going to try to limit my alcohol consumption overall for the month. One way you could do dry January, especially if you have partner buy-in, is to do a Ulysses contract or Ulysses pact. And this goes to Homer's The Odyssey, right, where Odysseus or Ulysses says that I think they're on the ship and they're going near the sirens, and the siren sound is, right, so beautiful and but deadly. And Ulysses says that he wants to hear the siren's song. But no matter what he says and how wild and raving he gets, he doesn't want his crew to untie him from the prow or the front of his boat, no matter what he says. So he sort of creates an arrangement beforehand, that even if he's trying to back out of it, don't follow through with it. Right. And so his crew members, I think they stuff their ears with cotton or something like that. It's been since eighth grade, I think, that I read the Odyssey. And, you know, Ulysses, when he hears the sound of the sirens, you know, he's tied up to the front of the boat and he's like, untie me. You know, I told you to tie me up earlier, but I was just kidding, you know, untie me now. I'm like, no, Ulysses, we're not going back on what you said before. And so you could sort of do this with dry January. You and your partner could make a pact that you're not going to drink. And no matter what you say and how hard you argue for it, you're not going to drink alcohol for the month of January. So maybe Friday comes around, you know, 2 or 3 weeks into January, and you're like, hey, you know how we said we're going to do dry January? Well, I really want an after work margarita on Friday, you know, celebrate the end of the work week and, you know, let's just sort of scrap what I said earlier. And maybe your partner can hold you accountable and say, no, you know, we had this pact, we had this contract, there's no going back on it. This also sort of reminds me of like two different types of resolutions that you can have. And being Catholic, right? I teach at Christian Brothers University, which is a Catholic university. It sort of reminds me of Lent resolutions. I don't know if they're called Lenten resolutions, but a lot of Catholics, a lot of Episcopalians give something up for Lent. They take away something, omitting something. Whereas other people, this is less common, decide to do more good works or good deeds. They do something by commission during Lent. And so we sort of have this with New Year's resolutions, right? Are you going to do something extra, which would be commission? So are you going to exercise more? Are you going to take your kids to ice cream more? You know, do something on commission? Or are you going to take away something that's undesirable, like taking away alcohol? I'm not going to drink as much. I'm not going to eat as many calories or as much junk food. I'm not going to have as much screen time. Those would be what we would consider sort of resolutions of omission. You're taking away something undesirable. This sort of parallels B.F. Skinner's operant conditioning. If you're trying to increase the frequency of a behavior, you know, it's reinforcement. If you're trying to decrease the frequency of a behavior, it's punishment. And so you can sort of see this parallel with New Year's resolutions. So you might be wondering, what is Colby Taylor's New Year's resolution for 2023? So one of my New Year's resolutions is a resolution of omission. It's taking away something undesirable, and that's limiting my amount of screen time. So my amount of screen time is pretty shameful. If you look at my cell phone or my iPhone, cell phone, that sounds so, I don't know, 1990s. My iPhone usage, I don't know, I think I'm averaging like 7 hours of screen time a day. And it's gotten even worse since I've been in quarantine and on break and everything. And so I want to get that down to 5 hours or less per day. That's specific, it's measurable, I think it's achievable. I'm not going, you know, cold turkey on screen time or anything like that. It's relevant to me in that I don't want my head in my phone. I want to be motivated to spend time with my family, my students. It's not really time related. I mean, it is time related in that it's screen time. It has time in it. But my end of the year average, I guess, will be, I'll look back on it. I'll do a postmortem of it. December 31st, 2023, we'll see what my screen time was down to. A lot of people make financially related goals for New Year's resolutions. I think that was down at number four. Of most common New Year's resolutions in the United States this year. And I've done some financial psychology work in the past. Psychologists, by the way, are awful at finances. They're like one of the worst professions when it comes to money stuff. This is something I think I've harped on in previous episodes, that psychologists really don't know money stuff. A lot of them have never taken a business class before. And then it's sort of taboo to talk about money in therapy, even though money is one of the top three stressors of people consistently. So money issues are very, very important, but psychologists sort of avoid talking about money like the plague. So I'm willing to bet if you've gone and seen a therapist before in their intake session, you know, they might ask demographic information, but they're probably not asking how much money you make. It's a taboo topic, even though it's really important to mental health. Anyways, back in 2018, 2019, I was on this sentimental savings study. It was Dr. Brad Klontz, who I mentioned was one of my mentors in internship, pre-doctoral internship, was the lead author on this study. And it was in conjunction with Capital One. And we traveled the United States doing this sentimental savings study, trying to motivate people to save money because people tend to undersave and overspend. So if you're thinking about financial goals, you can think about undersaving, which, you know, and overspending. Again, sort of that act of commission, that act of omission thing. You've sort of got undersaving and overspending that's going on. When we talk about fitness, it's going to be the same thing, right? You're overeating and you're under-exercising. But anyways, when it comes to savings, we tried to use emotional activation to increase people's, you know, contributions to their savings accounts or to the retirement funds. So it's probably not super motivating to think about, like, we're not really motivated by numbers and percentages. So saying that you're going to put forth, you know, 5% of your salary into your retirement this year, or you're going to put, you know, 30% of your salary into savings this year is not super motivating. It sounds like a good idea, but it's not really tying into sort of the emotional stuff that motivates us as humans. What's better, right, is to think about, okay, I'm going to put 30% in savings, and maybe you create sort of a vision board of savings. Why are you saving that money? You're saving the money so that you can go on a vacation to Europe in August of this year. And so you can come up with a vision board of, you know, the Eiffel Tower and a French baguette and really start to think about yourself in Paris and sort of emotionally activate these savings tendencies. And you're way more likely to save money when you're thinking about that. And if it's something far away like retirement, you know, you can think about, you know, having a vacation home somewhere or not having to work. And we're also really good when we automate things. We don't have to make it to where we, you know, manually go in at the end of every month and, you know, tweak our retirement and put money into it. You know, if we can automate it and sort of set it and forget it, we're way better at saving money. And so that's sort of what this sentimental saving study looked at. One of my co-authors on this study is Derek Tharpe. Derek Tharpe's an assistant professor at the University of Southern Maine. And he had a Facebook status the other day that was talking about, as a finance professor, what he recommends is sort of financial New Year's resolutions. And so Derek Tharpe recommended get your estate documents. So get a will in place. That's one place to start in 2023. Get term life insurance, increase your retirement contribution, get an app like Rocket Money so that you can monitor how much you're spending each month in subscriptions. My wife complains constantly about how much I'm probably spending in subscriptions. One of the subscriptions I'm spending on is to host this podcast because I have to pay storage and stuff every month. I think I'm paying like $10 a month. But, you know, your Disney Plus, your Netflix, your Hulu, I get the newspaper and National Geographic and all of that stuff obviously adds up. His final recommendation, or one of his final recommendations, was put money in a high-yield savings account. So there are savings accounts out there with interest rates of 3.75%. So if you're looking at New Year's resolutions related to finance, those seem like a pretty good place to start. Dr. Tharpe is an expert, so it sounds good to me. If your goals are more fitness-heavy, I always recommend gamifying your fitness, right? We're really good when we try to turn things into games. So people are suckers for badges. And I have an Apple Watch. I mentioned my iPhone earlier, trying to reduce screen time. But it always amazes me how motivating it is to do something stupid, like close your rings on your Apple Watch, right? And then at the end of the month, you might have a fitness challenge through your Apple Health app or whatever. You know, work out 7 days in a row, close your exercise ring 7 days in a row, something like that. And it can be super motivating to get these sort of stupid imaginary badges. So if you can gamify your fitness goals, which again makes them measurable and also helps with their relevancy, I think that's a good place to start. One of my subscriptions that I mentioned earlier, I haven't mentioned this one yet, but is an iFit subscription. So I have a treadmill and I have an exercise bike. And instead of Peloton, I have sort of the discount version of Peloton called iFit. And you can get badges every month for how often you you exercise. And they used to have they still do have live races every month. You can do a live 5K or whatever. And they used to send you medals in the mail. You get a medal for every 5K, live 5K that you completed. And that was super motivating to people. You also, after you reached 100 workouts, you would get a t-shirt in the mail, and 200 workouts, you get a gift certificate, and 500, you'd get like a hoodie or sweatshirt or something. People were super motivated by this. And they just announced today, right before I did this episode, I'm a member of the iFit Facebook group, that they were doing away with sort of these tangible rewards. People were freaking out. People were, you know, up in arms getting the pitchforks out that iFit was doing away with their t-shirts and their medals and their, they would send you magnets that you could put on your refrigerator if you completed a monthly challenge or whatever. And they're now making these all digital. And so people are all up in arms and freaking out. But gamification of fitness, I think, is great. The last thing I really wanted to touch on in this episode, it is the new year, and sort of turning the page on the calendar can create a lot of emotion in people. There can be positive emotions, right? 2023 is going to be my year. I'm super motivated to tackle it head on. Or 2022 was really crappy, and I'm glad to have it in the rearview mirror. It's sort of retrospective, right? You get these retrospective emotions, sort of like a birthday. You know, a birthday when you get a year older, right? There can be elation, happiness that, you know, you made it through another year, and, you know, birthdays tend to be happy times. But then you also think back, I'm getting a year older. I miss certain things that happened. Maybe I have certain regrets from the year past, whatever. I know a lot of people, or at least myself, you know, you might take a long shower the day after your birthday or something, and you just think and, sort of be really mindful of your year in review. And this can bring about some depressing emotions, right? You hear them called the post-holiday blues. And there's a lot of reasons why we might have these post-holiday blues, right? You might have been off work or out of school for a week or two, and now all of a sudden you're returning to work. And we have a phenomenon that's closely related to this called the post-vacation blues. So you go on vacation for a week. It's something you've been really looking forward to. And then all of a sudden you're no longer in Hawaii or the Cayman Islands or wherever you went on vacation. You're back at your desk, and, you know, that thing that you were looking forward to for 6 months before is over. Teenagers tend to have sort of like the post-prom blues. So we have that that's sort of playing into the post-holiday blues. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, right, there's less sunlight in the wintertime. And so this can sort of play into seasonal affective disorder, which in previous episodes we talked about how seasonal affective disorder is not a standalone diagnosis in the DSM-5 text revision. Instead, it would be major depressive disorder with seasonal pattern onset. So we have that playing in the post-holiday blues. You might have overindulged over the holidays, so you might have a little bit of a hangover from alcohol use, or you might not be really happy with where you are physically because you ate too much. And so all of these can sort of congeal together, and you might feel a little bit low this January. It is a myth, though, that suicide rates are higher during the holidays or after the holidays. Suicide rates aren't actually the highest after holidays or in the winter. The highest rates of suicide are actually in the spring. But yeah, post-holiday blues, super common. I saw something from the National Alliance of the Mentally Ill, NAMI, that 64% of people will experience post-holiday blues. Anyways, I think I'm recording this during nap time. I don't know if you heard that beeping in the background, but that was my baby monitor. So my kids might be stirring. So I'm going to draw this episode to a close. Feel free to send me your New Year's resolutions. I'm really curious to see what people are attempting to do for this New Year's. Or send me episode requests or comments or whatever to CTAYLO41@cbu.edu. And I'm going to wrap this episode up. So see you around in 2023.